Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome to Toledo Works. I'm Stephen Zenner, journalist with the Toledo Free Press, and today we're talking with a group of people from the Metro Parks Toledo, so we'll be hearing a bit from those fine people. First up is Lorenzo Melcher. Hi, Lorenzo. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Doing all right. Now, Lorenzo, you work as the Park Services Manager. I imagine people have an idea of kind of what that means, but beyond, you know, trimming brush or whatever, can you explain what that is? And I'm not insinuating that that's that's the totality of your job either.
So. No, that's part of it. For me, it's the daily operations of the park. So we, you know, when we first get there, it's cleaning restrooms, checking garbage cans, making sure the park looks ready for people at 7 o'clock when they're allowed to come in throughout the day, you know, depending on the season. Now, you know, removing snow. We got doing a lot of inside projects when it gets cold. And then during the summer, it's, you know, trimming back trails, mowing, weed whipping. We have a lot of seasonal workers that do a lot of that work for us too. But anything that makes the park run, facilities, rental facilities, anything that makes the park run is what me and my staff take care of.
Sounds like a lot of outdoor work.
Correct.
Is that correct? So I imagine you like being outside.
Yes. Yeah. So when I decided to go back to school, it was after flipping and dogging ear and a bunch of pages in the Owens Community College catalog, it was X-ray tech and landscape and turf grass management, and the deciding factor was outside. I wanted to be outside, and that's how I got into this industry. And you know, I've been with the parks for 5 years, but I've been in the green industry for I think 12 years now.
Okay. Yeah. So an immediate thing that you were considering was X-ray tech. That's kind of interesting. What kind of got you down that route? I know it's not Metro Parks, but like what got you into that field? And then, you know, you mentioned already that it was the outdoor focus that made you choose that other path.
You know, it's been so long and I don't remember. I think it was just I wanted to go back to school. I knew I wanted to go back to school. Mm-hmm. So it was like, all right, these things interest me. And just so happens that it got down to those two things that were interesting to me. And then, you know, I picked outside. And, you know, I've been to a lot of places. I started at a landscape company working, you know, 50 hours a week. And eventually I found my way to work for Dana Corporation, where it was as a groundskeeper for them. And I love that because it's 40 hours. And if you're in this industry, you rarely find those jobs where you can work outside and work 40 hours. So I found that and made my way to University of Toledo, and I was there for 7 years. Mm. And then after that, I was at the Metro Parks.
Was the maintenance job kind of what you were doing just to kind of pay the bills, and you were thinking about something else, or how would that work out?
Yeah, at first it was, I want to be outside, I want to work. And then I really enjoyed it. And there was a time there where I also coach high school sports. Mm. So I liked that aspect of being a leader and being in charge. And in my career, I was always, you know, the guys like, hey, can you go do this? Can you do that? Never put in an opportunity to be a supervisor or some sort of manager. And, you know, when I was at UT, I had that opportunity. But before that finished its process, I made my way to the Metro Parks. And I think about it now, even at Metro Parks, when I first got there, my supervisor then, Brian, he said, what do you want to do at the Metro Parks? I was like, oh, I want to be a park director. Mm-hmm. So, like, I knew pretty quickly that I want to be in charge. Like, I liked it. I like running the staff. I like them succeeding and as, you know, hopefully it's partly because of my leadership. So as I continued as a maintenance guy, you know, an opportunity came up at Pearson Metro Park for a supervisor. So I took that opportunity and, you know, I've been a supervisor now for 4 years and I really enjoy it. Again, I like running a staff. I like putting them in opportunities for them to succeed, whether it's on a football field or at the Metro Parks, you know, where we're making things right for the community.
How did you get your start? And did you start as a manager? Are you managing kind of all the parks? Or do you have a few parks that you're concentrated on?
I started as a maintenance guy. So I was park maintenance, you know, just working on machines. You know, I was at Providence Metro Park at the time, working on the mill there, you know, and fixing anything that was broken. And as a park manager now, I work on the downtown parks, notably Glass City Metro Park is the one that I supervise, along with Middle Grounds Metro Park, Manhattan Marsh, Ravine, and Glass City Upriver, which is the old International Park.
So not all the parks?
Nope, those main ones, downtown. Okay. Yeah, anything that's on the Riverwalk is something I can manage.
And as I understand it, those parks, you know, every region of the Metro Parks is going to have different, you know, challenges or different ways to manage them. What have you found are the specific challenges for managing the more downtown metro parks? Specifically, you know, I would say the Riverwalk, Glass City Riverwalk. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unlike a number of other parks that the Metro Parks have put up.
I think the number one reason other people would say is like damage or graffiti or anything like that. But we don't experience, mm-hmm. we do experience that, but just on the same level as any other park. I think the hardest thing for us down at Glass City is the things that we have. So we have the Ice Ribbon, Market Hall, mm-hmm. we have the Mini Mommy, you know, all those are unique to Glass City, which makes running Glass City unique because there are things that, you know, the manager at Oak Openings doesn't have to think about running ice every morning. You know, every morning we have our staff checking the ice numbers to make sure everything's good. There's no alarms in our system because, you know, on days like we had a few days ago when it was 60 degrees, as long as everything's running, we can still have people out ice skating.
I did a story a number of years ago on the ice at Glass City Metro Park. I remember that's a lot more tricky than it may seem. I think most people go out there and they're like, oh, it's cold, the ice is out there, good to go. Can you explain a little bit more about what goes on under the ice and what goes into its maintenance? Because I know there's a lot that goes into there.
Yes, we have a lot of partners that help us run the ice ribbon. So, you know, obviously during construction, that was they put 16 miles of black pipe under the concrete to let those chemicals run through to freeze the concrete. When we started up, we have a company called Sports Facilities helps us. They put the water on and, you know, quarter inch by quarter inch build up the ice for the season. They run our ice skating concession for us. Mm-hmm. That is a daunting task, but the supervisor there is great and their staff is great. And then even to turn the system on, we use contractors for that too, just to make sure everything's right. And, you know, at some point down the road, you know, maybe that's something we can handle. But right now we trust our partners and we have a good relationship with them to get things running and always going. You know, for my staff, what they look for is to make sure, you know, the boards aren't falling apart, or if there is something mm-hmm. broken and we're told about it, then we'll go take care of it. You know, sometimes the market hall door, you know, the lock might mess up and we got to go help fix that. You know, like I mentioned earlier, they look at the ice numbers we have to make sure the temperature is where it's supposed to be. Every morning they check and every evening they check it. So we try to stay on top of it as much as we can because there, you know, we have a whole room, a whole building called the Ice Support Building that holds just the components to run the ice and hold the Zamboni. So we have a whole building dedicated to that because it is important to make sure mm-hmm. that we have, you know, the ice ready for, I believe we've over 150,000 skaters now, I think, that we've had. So that's, it's very popular and we got to make sure we're on top of it.
Yeah, it is very popular. It's a kind of an iconic thing. If you take a picture from above or with people take pictures with drones, mm-hmm. you see the ribbon, you see the look of it. I understand that, you know, the Zambonis and the different things that go into, you know, like a regular ice rink, but this is an outdoor ice rink. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of get into, I know you talked about, you know, like all the different piping that's underneath and stuff like that, but it's different when it's an outdoor ice rink, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the weather obviously plays big into the operation of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can handle snow. That's not a big deal. We had the big snow a few weeks ago. You know, we were able to take our piece of equipment with a big snow thrower and run it around the ribbon to get most of the snow off. And then Sports Facilities, our partner there, takes care of the rest. When it's warm out, you know, we can handle warm as long as it's, you know, if it's 50 degrees, fine. But once it starts raining or windy.
That's what I was going to ask. Yes. What about when it rains?
Yep. The warm rain and the wind really eat up the ice. But luckily, we know that's coming, so we can build up ice leading to that day because we know we're going to lose some. So as long as we can build up a cup, you know, an inch or two extra, then we can we have that loss and we're back to even.
And does that relate to, you know, if you're going to the Metro Parks and then you, you know, if it's about to rain or something like that, do you just close it down, or how does that work for like people who participate with the park? And is that, does that correlate to a delay in any way?
We try not to close it down, and we've been lucky where we haven't had to. Now, we've had times where the ice is very wet, and if people fall, they you know, get pretty wet. But we've been pretty lucky. I think this year we've only closed down because it was too cold, and we didn't want people coming out to the parks. We closed down today. It snowed a lot. Again, we were under a snow emergency, so we didn't want people coming out. We can keep it open pretty much all the time. We just let people know, like, hey, it's really wet, or people, you know, when they come in, for their rentals, we tell them the conditions of the ice, or sometimes people will call the sports facilities and say, hey, how's the ice look? So we try to keep it open as much as we can. Any inclement weather, we will shut it down.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's a finicky thing that we're doing there. Sometimes the weather doesn't correlate with the plans to ice skate.
Yeah, and you know, people want, they'll come out. When we have it open, the day we closed because it was really cold, people still would have came out, and I would have been a lot less people, but there still would have been people out there. They love coming out and skate, so that's why we try to keep it open regardless of that.
Is it ever equally difficult with rollerblading or anything like that in the summer?
Yeah, it's the same thing. If it's raining, if it's storming out pretty hard, you know, we'll just say, hey, we're not going to rent skates out today. A lot of times we'll keep it open because it is open to the public. If you have your own skates, you can go roller skates, you can go and rollerblade, roller skate around, or you know, if the kids have their little scooters, they can. But if we're shutting down the Mini Mommy because of rain, we're going to shut that down too.
Right.
Yeah.
You also have a number of other pretty unique buildings there. Are there any other buildings there that require kind of a unique touch? I know the one building has kind of grass up on top of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does that require anything particularly special?
Yeah, that's the Glass City Pavilion. That's a rentable facility we have at the Glass City Metro Park. It is cool. It's a rooftop garden. It's got tiles of sedum up there, plants that are, you know, we don't have to water a lot. And we don't have to fertilize very much. Mostly anything, it's weeding. So we do, you know, we have to strap ourselves in, buckle ourselves in as we're climbing up around there, pulling the weeds out.
Oh, wow.
You know, we have a great horticulture staff that does that. One of my assistants, Emily Main, does a great job running that horticulture staff. So yeah, they take care of all that. It is awesome to see, especially when everything's not necessarily in bloom, but when everything's growing, all the different colors of sedum that are up there, different greens and maroons and oranges and stuff. It's really cool to see during the season.
It is. It's cool to see, I would say, anytime. It's a unique building. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a green design, but you have a lot of other things growing there. I've noticed, you know, you planted a number of trees, so you're essentially kind of building somewhat of a forest there. Does that require a lot of your attention as well?
Yeah, we try to do a lot of that, and that is our natural resources department does a great job at, you know, getting grants for trees and finding contractors to help us plant these trees. So us in operations, we take care of what's already there. Natural resources department does a great job of, you know, planting whips or ball and burlap trees and trying to fill that in. And it is a good point. The one downside of Glass City Metro Park, it doesn't feel like a park per se, because you go to other metro parks, there's forest, there's woods, all that everywhere. We don't have that yet. You know, 50 years down the road.
Yeah, even just driving by, you know, this year versus other years, the trees are much bigger than they were before. So.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing we noticed with all those different trees and plants is just the wildlife that's coming back too. You know, right now I asked one of my staff members, what keeps tearing up the beds, and we have a skunk that lives on property, which you know, some people are like, oh, there's a skunk there. But for us, it's cool because that place, the land was nothing for a long time.
It attracted some wildlife.
Yeah, and it's cool to see like all the wildlife and the birds of prey there. I think during construction, we had a juvenile eagle that was sitting on one of our big towers there for a while, you know, and hearing all the different birds and, you know, different rodents and stuff that are around. Like, now, we had a bunch of field mice that we discovered that are living in our grasses, the tall ornamental grasses. So we're trying to get those a little bit away from the building, you know, but, you know, we have habitat for them outside of that. But it's cool to be able to see the change, you know, and then we notice like, oh, if they are coming back, then we are doing something positive here. Then the people are visiting, but also the animals are coming back too.
That's great. That's wonderful. The other question specifically about the Glass City Metro Park is the playground. Do you ever have to tighten bolts or anything like that? Or is it it's a unique playground kind of design. Is there anything unique about the maintenance of it or cleaning it? Or, you know, kids get into all sorts of different stuff. Yeah. So,
yeah, it is. So it's our Grosbeak playground is 42 feet tall. Mm-hmm. It is very unique structure. It's very noticeable from anywhere in the park. You can see the top, at least the top of it. And yeah, once a month we inspect it. And then twice a year we have a certified playground safety inspector come out and inspect it as well, which we have on staff. I think there's four or five in the whole park district. And, you know, when they find something wrong in those inspections, we'll go fix it. Sometimes, you know, it will be pointed to us by a park user like, hey, this is broken or the swing's broken or can someone fix this? There's graffiti up there. Can you, you know, take care of the graffiti?
That's already happened.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. There's always things, you know, with building a structure that big, using so many moving parts and bolts and nuts and stuff, things are bound to, you know, come loose or, you know, get messed with or, you know, tampered and that kind of stuff. So we're always fixing something, you know, but because we have so many people there, we have staff there all the time, you know, we're always catching these things pretty quickly.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known that. You guys are on the ball.
Oh, yeah. We have to be. It's very popular, both playgrounds. We have another playground there, Pollinator Playground. They're both popular. And so we're always, you know, someone's always laying eyes on them, not necessarily focused on the inspection or looking at the playground itself. But if you're there, you know, picking up garbage or, you know, tending to the plants around the playground, you keep an eye on those kind of things.
You have a like kind of a smaller area with like the water implements. I understand that probably has a number of different piping issues as well. Is that a complex build or is that have pretty regular maintenance as well?
Yeah, it was complex and it was really cool to see it come together, you know, being there when the construction was happening to see it go from nothing to where it is now. Like it is really awesome. And it's a very popular destination for people. But we have, you know, just like the ice ribbon, when it's in season, you know, we test the water twice a day, just like we would with the pool. We have filters and stuff that we change in our vault room for the mini mommy. And it is there is maintenance, but once, you know, our staff is there, they're noticing things, they're telling us things, or again, park users will come up and tell us like, hey, you know, something's going on here, or there's kids, you know, pulling twigs out and using them as boats, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, we stay on top of these things, not only my staff, but the park users too.
It sounds like it's a real collaborative effort to keep these parks clean.
Absolutely.
You mentioned that you also work with the Manhattan Marsh Metro Park and the Middle Grounds Metro Park.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a favorite activity that you like to do, or is there a favorite park that you have?
So I really love Manhattan Marsh. I go out there, at least try to go out there, and you know, when I'm making work lists for my staff, you can walk that whole park. And I really enjoy doing that. There's usually not a lot of people there. There's a lot of wildlife. I've seen eagles dive to get fish. There is a big buck that lives there. I think he's maybe a 12-point buck that lives around Manhattan. But just seeing, you know, all the wildlife, especially in the spring, a lot of baby geese, which, you know, aren't the greatest, but it's cool to see baby animals, right? You know,
some people like geese.
Sure, yeah. but I really like Manhattan just for that, you know, and we built a new shelter there so that people can rent out and have parties and stuff there. So it is a nice park to visit.
Thank you so much, Lorenzo. We'll be right back with more from the Metro Parks. And we're back. We're talking with individuals from the Metro Parks Toledo, and I'm here with the Manager of Public Programs, Ashley Smith. How you doing, Ashley?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. I've seen a few different of these programs around. Generally, you're working with kids, but I understand this is a wide range of different programs that you have. Can you kind of give an overview of what the Metro Parks offers in their programs?
Sure. Yeah. Actually, I like to tell my staff that we are professionals at playing outside, which is literally the best job that I could think of in the whole world. And we work with kids, but we also work with adults. Pretty much anybody who plays outside, we're going to be working with them. And if they don't play outside, then we're trying to make places accessible. We're trying to make programs accessible to try to bring those who might typically have any sort of barriers to playing outside to come join us.
So that encompasses a wide...
Yeah,
that comes because we are kind of in our cars and it's, you know, hard to get contact with like a real kind of nature environment. So what are the different ways that you do that?
It changes depending on the needs of the community and the interests of the community. So a while ago when Hunger Games was really popular, we had archery totally explode. And when Pokemon Go was, I mean, it's still a thing that people are doing. We have less people in the parks that are like running into trees because they're looking at their phone now. But it, you know, that was something that we tried to also connect. So any time that people are connecting with the outdoors, we want to be, you know, ahead of it and also kind of paving the way for that. So you name it. And
so you're saying that the Pokemon gyms at the Metro Parks are by design. Is that what you're saying?
No, actually, I mean, I had nothing to do with that design.
Okay.
But trying to capture people, because that audience might not necessarily have attended a park program.
Mm.
But, you know, we were trying to be creative in the way that we were capturing those people who might be visiting the park for the first time and, you know, just capturing them in creative ways. So we do a little bit of whatever. My favorite thing that we do is tree climbing by far.
And yeah, I don't know if I've seen particularly tree climbing, but I know that you carry around the rock wall to different events and different things like that. Yeah, can you get into, is the tree climbing at multiple parks or is that at one particular park? Or?
Yeah, great question. Right now, I'm not in the field as much, so I'm losing touch with some of the details. Not a details person anymore. And I think we have 10 trees in 10 different locations right now. So those are throughout the park system. But we also actually, speaking of accessibility, we have, we did a grant partnership with Wood County Board of DD to purchase an aerial rig, which people tend to use in circus venues or opportunities that people run a trapeze off of or like a hoop or whatever. But we're using it for mobile, accessible tree climbing. So just being creative with the different ways to get people involved and just to be able to try something maybe for the first time ever, maybe for the only time ever. So tree climbing is by far one of my favorite things that we offer. But I mean, we're talking also, we have canoeing and kayaking and stand-up paddle boarding. We have, I talked about archery a little bit. We have, you know, how to go camping, how to go backpacking. It's a little bit of everything. Fishing, geocaching. I mean, I could keep listing. But those are, you know, survival skills. Those are our most popular ones. One that we started this year too, which has been really interesting. Sorry, we started it last year. Is cold water immersion.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah,
like,
so that one's really fun.
So,
too.
Does that have to do with like the cold plunges?
Yep.
Or, okay. So, yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about that? I know that the cold plunge here, jumping into the Maumee River, is a big event. Maybe not so popular for some of the population, but some people really get into it.
Yeah. And so the polar plunge that you're referring to is more of like a, oh my gosh, I'm going to jump into this cold water type situation. And the program that we have set up is more of the, I'm going to be mindful about this cold water experience and what it's doing for me in several different layers of my life. So maybe spiritually, mentally, obviously physically as well, and just kind of being open to all of those feelings that come associated with it. So it's pretty interesting.
This has been somewhat of a podcast craze. This has had a life online, the ice baths.
Yeah.
Is that a correlation? Because for a few years I was taking cold showers.
Yeah, interesting. I think, yes. So this was something that was very popular. I had a staff member that said, I really want to offer this. And I said, I don't really know anything about it, but let's give it a try. And it's been really well received. We keep it really small so that people have a high quality experience. So it's not like invite all your friends out and we're all going to jump into cold water together. It's like you walk out a little bit at a time. You take notice of what's happening, of how you're feeling. Keep breathing. There's even a mantra that you say, like, I'm safe, I'm calm, I'm ready to dip, something like that. It has been really powerful for some people too. There are a lot of, supposed health benefits, but cold water is pretty much free.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, the medical field doesn't necessarily get behind it because there's no money in cold water.
Right. But there is like a shift that happens in your perspective after you.
There is. Yeah. I really thought going into it and knowing that I was going to be in a cold, because we use Wiregrass Lake.
Mm.
So I'm in this beautiful place. I'm not just taking a cold shower, you know? Not that there's not benefit to that, but there's also this, you know, a beautiful place being with a couple other people and us program, Metro Park staff member that you trust, and being able to do that dip. I really thought that I was going to yell obscenities and run away because I felt really nervous about it at first, but doing it felt amazing. And the endorphins that are released, you know, afterwards, there's a whole lot of science behind it, and a whole lot of, you know, mental and physical benefits.
Yeah, I think my experience with cold showers is a little bit different, maybe not as beautiful. You're kind of describing something that sounds akin to a spiritual experience, which I imagine is what your job is at the Metro Parks. But my experience was more, oh, this is really, really cold. Hold it for 2 minutes, get out, and then I have a clarity of mind. And then I tell my friend, hey, when I do this, I can think a little bit more straight. And then he does it, and then that kind of is how, but what you're saying sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's something we can offer. It's pretty unique.
Yeah. But let's zoom out a little bit.
Yeah.
So you have a number of educational resources. You have a lot of educational buildings that like you can kind of go through, use as either like spaces for activities or different things like that. Mm-hmm. I think I've come across a number of your kids programs, but how did you get into this role? And then I understand that like the demographics are so wide, but let's kind of focus on like some of the kids programs, and then we can kind of move into some of the more inclusive adult programs.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how
did you get involved?
How did I get started? Yeah. That's a really kind of a long, funny story. The short of it is I always loved being outside, but nobody else around me really like cultivated this other than sports. Once I found the outdoor program at BGSU, it was like, I need to be outside all the time. These are finally my people. And
what sports did you do? Just out of curiosity.
I did soccer, like forever. And I had a bunch of friends through there, but they were all just very much like, I know celebrities and let's go shopping and this is my designer purse.
Not your scene.
And I mean, no judgment from them on me, but I had absolutely nothing in common with them.
I just needed to get away.
But like I had this just urge ever since I was really young to be camping and doing things outside, and didn't really understand what all of it meant until I was at the BGSU outdoor program and went backpacking for the first time. And I was like, oh, these people exist. I'm so happy to have found them. And I still have my very much in tune with celebrity gossip friends from high school, but now there's just this whole nother world that exists that I've always just felt in my heart and always felt like I was a part of. So really, it was just a chance that I took to end up at Metro Parks. I did have my degree in recreation, actually, and environmental education, but that was because I switched majors in college. I had no idea what I really wanted to do. I kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, I like recreating. And so I graduated from BGSU with a degree in recreation. But it was the most important piece of that experience was they forced internships. And so one of them was with BGSU Outdoor Program. And then the other internship that I had was with 577 Foundation.
Okay.
And just
that's
being
out of
in the
Perrysburg, right?
Yeah, in Perrysburg. And just being in the field and like in this, what do they call it? Just a non-formal, informal way of learning was just it for me. That's what I needed. I learned so much at the 577 Foundation that I would have never learned from school. And so I was like, yes, this is the direction that I want to go. I had a couple other jobs in between there. I worked and lived in Alaska for a season, a summer. We finally came back. I got an adult job dispatching ambulances.
Oh.
Randomly. So slightly but like different. I had benefits. Yeah. I had vacation. I was on first shift. Like all of my adulting was lining up. And I threw it all away to take a chance at a seasonal camp job at Metro Parks.
Yeah. But, well, it sounds like your experience with the outdoor program at BGSU is significant.
Yeah.
So you mentioned backpacking and how that was kind of a big moment for you. Were you backpacking in Northwest Ohio?
No.
Okay.
First backpacking trip, I think, was Pine Creek Gorge in Pennsylvania, which is considered like the Grand Canyon of the East Coast.
Okay.
And I had no idea what I was doing, but I loved it and I had a great time.
So you kind of got into this career with this experience of connecting with the outdoors, finding kind of what worked for you. And it sounds like you wanted to kind of spread what you had learned. Is that kind of how that happened?
Yeah, I grew up in the Oak Openings region, and I found that I didn't really care about it until I got to play in it.
Okay.
So, you know, people see the Maumee River, and I think in general there's like a, that's a dirty river, that's a muddy river kind of feeling about it. But when you're in a boat and you're kayaking on the Maumee and you see like a tern, like a bird come and dive in front of you and get a fish, or like hear the kingfishers and you see like a bald eagle in a tree right there, it makes you appreciate it in a whole new way. And so just being able to experience that for me was eye-opening, and then I just want to share that opportunity with other people.
Right. How do you get, you know, these kids, they have you know, they have their phones, they have their screens and different things like that. How do you create a program that distills this, you know, it's a vivid description you're giving me. How do you give people that experience?
Mostly just by giving them the opportunity to, you know, it doesn't take a lot to convince people to be able to do it. And then just meeting them in that moment, wherever they are showing up and being present with them and helping them have that connection is really powerful and significant. So making, you know, eye contact with people or helping them try something that might be a little scary for the first time and just helping them feel safe through that process is a really important part of helping with that connection.
So it sounds like what you do for kids and what you do for adults may not be terribly different.
No, it's really not. It's, you know, for kids, it might be more of a goofy piece, you know, or a exciting and fun joke that might hook their attention, or just the personality of our staff and being genuine. But it's really the same for adults as well. The program content might just be a little bit different.
So if I had to kind of distill what you're telling me, it sounds like what you're saying is that you kind of just do these nature icebreakers for people. You're creating implements to kind of break the ice and introduce people to nature.
A lot of times, yeah. And then, you know, we have our continuum of services. So if somebody is coming to, you know, backpacking 101, we have a backpacking 201 and a backpacking 301 opportunity as well. If somebody is coming to do archery with us for the first time, we say, okay, well, we also have archery rentals. So come back and then we'll give you a really little safety talk, remind you of all the things that you've already experienced, and then you can go to Westwinds and do the 3D range on your own. And then, you know, if you're interested in buying a bow, here is what you might want to look at. And, you know, these are some places where you can do it. And then you can come back to Westwinds on your own.
Yeah, that sounds like you're meeting people across their interests and kind of allowing them to have their own experience in that kind of freeform way.
Right. Yeah.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, Ashley Smith, Manager of Public Programs for Metro Parks Toledo.
Thanks.
Talking with Mr. Metro Parks himself, Scott Carpenter, the Director of Public Relations for the Metro Parks. How you doing, Scott?
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing all right. Now, the Metro Parks have a number of great things about them, and you are very good at telling us all about some of the great things. First off, how many Metro Parks are there?
There are 19 Metro Parks, which is still amazing to say, because when I started here 28 years ago, there were 9.
So, wow.
And in the last 10 years, we've opened 9 new ones.
Is it 9 or 10 new ones?
In the last 10 years, we've opened 9 new ones.
Yeah, okay.
Gone
okay,
from
gotcha,
9 to 19. Gotcha. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So what are some of the newbies? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, you talked to a coworker of mine, Lorenzo, who manages several of the newer ones. Glass City being the most recent, Manhattan Marsh, which those two opened pretty close to each other in 2020. But we also have Cannonball Prairie, maybe one of the least known Metro Parks, because it also opened in 2020 with very little fanfare because it was in May of 2020.
Okay.
The pandemic
was
very new, and we just said, it's ready, let's just open it so people have another place to go, because the parks were very busy at that time. Westwinds, I think was mentioned earlier, is an archery park. It's the only park that's the only one of the parks that's not open year round. We close it in the winter, but it'll be open again in April. And what else? Fallen Timbers Battlefield, Blue Creek, Did I get to 10 yet? Howard Marsh, our second biggest metro park out by Lake Erie. Mm. So yeah, it's several new places to go and each very different from another. So
right. And the metro parks, you know, we, you know, here in Lucas County, we get to vote on your levies and different things like that. What are there new things that people can expect coming out of the metro parks? As you said, there's a pretty grand expansion. Obviously, the Riverwalk is a large portion of that. What's new and what can people expect to see?
Sure. So we think very long term. All these new parks that opened recently, I like to remind people that we're an overnight success, 20 years in the making, because it stems from a land levy approved by voters in 2002 when we started acquiring more land to assemble park size parcels of property. So it sometimes can take 10 years, 20 years to go from nothing to a brand new metro park. We're in the process, a 10-year process right now. We're approaching the halfway mark in developing Glass City Riverwalk, which is both sides of the Maumee River from the Veterans Glass City Skyway to the Anthony Wayne Bridge.
Right. And there's four parts to that expansion?
There's three major parts. And okay. So Glass City Metro Park that's open today and very popular all of a sudden became our most visited metro park almost overnight. That's about 25% of the Riverwalk. The next 25% is what's under construction today on both sides of the river.
Okay.
And that will open in June and put us at the halfway point.
So, okay, and that includes like International Park, and then I'm not sure the park on the other side of the
river. It does. So it includes part of International Park from Main Street to the Docks Restaurant Complex, and the downtown side from Cherry Street to Ford Industry. So that entire
longer,
stretch.
Yeah.
Behind the Fifth Third Building is where a lot of the activity will be centered. The next phase after that, we'll be planning all next year, is the Vistula neighborhood. So from Cherry Street to the Craig Bridge.
Yeah, and that part is kind of the older part of Toledo, correct?
The oldest part of Toledo, actually. Yeah, Toledo's first neighborhood.
And are there any challenges there? I know we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but I understand that that used to be the railroad area. There used to be a railroad there.
Yeah, really, this whole footprint along the riverfront was industrial and railroads, where Glass City is today. We give tours down there, and I always tell people, God didn't make any of this. this is all man-made, all fill. So if you know Front Street, Front was the edge of the river.
Right.
So everything else was filled in, and going way over 100 years ago, that property was called Rolling Mills, a steel mill. Lots of railroads coming and going to it, and in more recent memory, people will remember the old Acme power plant that sat there. That's where the skating rink basically is today. So all of that was industrial. Now, International Park, the city gave over to Metro Parks to expand Glass City. So that too was industrial. The building where the Docks restaurants are that's carved out, that's privately owned. But that building was the Toledo Streets, Bridges, and Harbors Department originally.
I've seen a few different flags over there that kind of have that vibe that.
The other side of the river, where Toledo Pickle Company is now, that was the next location for the Streets, Bridges, and Harbor Department. So they're being displaced for the second time for the pickleball complex. That's right. all of that was industrial and municipal uses.
That has been a large project. It's been a large project for a long time. I've heard anybody from the mayor to the commissioners talk about the metro parks. What goes into a large plan like that? What goes into a number of different politicians have kind of sold it is, you know, like getting rid of these industrial buildings, like you said, on the river and kind of making it a place where you can show off the river, return it to nature, do that kind of stuff. What goes into that?
Yeah, all those earlier uses made perfect sense at the time. Things have just changed. And today, what the catalyst, I think, I know, for what we're doing today was the business community who got together with the city and county and created the 22nd Century Committee that turned into developing a new downtown master plan. They had benchmark cities around the country to come up with a formula. What makes a successful downtown? Green space was a big part of it. And they decided that we needed 300 acres of green space. At the time, we had 30. The Riverwalk will be 300 acres. So that will fulfill that part of the plan. So, and that's, you know, people who do what I do and people in business aren't always on the same page, right? We were with this one. We're working together for the, you know, the future of downtown and ultimately the whole, all of Northwest Ohio. So we see this as a transformational project. Like you mentioned, different developers, different mayors came in with different concepts for that property. I used to be a newspaper reporter, and I covered several different announcements of what was going to be where Glass City Metro Park is now, and none of them ever came to fruition. I don't know why it did this time. It was kind of a coming together of the right people at the right time that agreed on the direction, and here we are.
And you've mentioned, you know, Glass City Metro Park is about a fourth of that entire master plan. What are the things that you've noticed with the Glass City Metro Park? It's become kind of a flagship park for the Metro Parks. What are some of the benefits that you've seen coming from that park in particular?
The biggest is reaching new audiences. The people who come to Glass City may not be the same folks who go to Oak Openings or Swan Creek or any of the other Metro Parks. And I get it. I grew up partly in East Toledo and partly in Oregon. I was an adult applying for this job when I went to Wildwood for the first time. If you can imagine that, yeah. Pearson was my Metro Park. So we're maybe not as mobile as we think we are. So opening Glass City, though, people come from all over. They've come from dozens of states, but the primarily the visitors come from right around that area, which has been wonderful to meet whole new groups of people, and they might come for different reasons than you would go to Oak Openings, which might be more for hiking or birding or things like that. But you know, there's different entries to becoming a nature lover, and for many of us, it was going to a playground in a park, right? So we've upped our game a bit with the skating ribbon, the 42-foot tall play tower. So hopefully that's, you know, gets people to come outdoors and enjoy our natural resources, and we invite them to come to other parks from there.
Right along that front street, there's kind of been reporting that neighborhood is kind of coming back, and just the number of years that people are moving in across the street and different things like that. Was there a, and so it seems like it's been effective. Was there a kind of a blueprint that we were following? Were there other cities that we were kind of looking at and saying, hey, they did this, this was effective for them?
Yeah, step one when we decided to go forward with this was to benchmark other cities. So we sent staff to Des Moines, Omaha, Tulsa, Grand Rapids, Louisville, Kentucky, places that have that our Chamber of Commerce told us we compete with, not just for business, but for talent, because that's one of our issues here is keeping and attracting young talent who want to live here. I don't know that people have a bad sense of Toledo. I just don't know that we're on their radar.
Right.
So if you're a recent graduate with a brand new engineering degree and you've got interview opportunities around the country and one of them's Toledo, the first thing you're probably going to do is Google, what is Toledo? Where is this? What do they have to offer? Yeah. And we need to show them a great lifestyle here, which I think we have. So that was a big part of our plan to transform the riverfront.
To just kind of wrap that up a little bit, do you know when the next phase of the riverfront is going to be completed?
So the parts that's under construction now, we'll be celebrating June 11th through 13th, 11th through 14th. We'll have multiple events to celebrate it. You'll be hearing more about that soon.
So that's this year?
This year, yeah. Wow. In just a few months, that'll put us at the halfway point. Then we have another year of planning before you see much, more dirt being shoveled. But in the next 2 years, you'll see that section of the Vistula neighborhood, which is right across from Glass City Metro Park. You'll see that start to take shape.
That's exciting. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned your Metro Park was Pearson. Mm-hmm. Was that just because of proximity, or like, is there something special about that park? I've heard a number of different people talk about that as well, that particular park.
Yeah, I grew up about a mile and a half from Pearson, and you were a big boy when you could ride your bike without your parents to Pearson with your fishing pole. I'd pack my lunch. It was like my own private day camp. And it's always been that to me. That's always kind of been home. And if you're from that part, the east side of the county, Pearson's typically where you go to have family reunions. Mm. And Maycumber Lodge is where you have baby showers and weddings and things like that. So that was very much a part of growing up. I still think of that as home, and it's I love that park for the history that's there. It was another park that was built. Part of it was wooded, but a lot of it was built from scratch because it had been farmed. Mm. It was in the 1930s, and a lot of the work was done by work programs like the WPA and CCC. So a lot of history there. It was one of our early parks and still remains one of our most popular.
Is there a park? I would imagine Glass City Metro Park is your most popular park. Is there another park after that that receives a lot?
Glass City and Wildwood are neck and neck, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know Wildwood was still up there. I knew Wildwood was very popular.
You know? Wildwood has been the most visited park forever, and was our new park for 40 years. Because we didn't build another park for 40 years.
And that park in particular is the Stranahan's old home, isn't it?
Yeah. So we just last year celebrated the 50 years since it became a metro park. And it had been the family home of Robert and Paige Stranahan. He was co-founder of Champions Park Club.
And did they donate the park, or did they?
They did not.
Okay, sorry.
No, actually we... My predecessor used to kindly say the Stranahans did a lot of good things for Toledo, but Wildwood wasn't one of them.
Oh, wow.
They were gone by then, though. So it was a hard-fought battle during difficult times in the 70s when people were standing in gas lines and things to convince people to pass the second levy Metro Parks ever passed, and we had just passed the first one about a couple years before. So nobody gave it any chance of passing, and it passed with like 53%. One of my former directors used to say it passed by such a narrow margin, but he never ran into anybody who admitted to voting against it. So.
Really? Wow. That's kind of crazy. It is probably the Metro Park that I knew the best. It's probably the one that introduced me to it. Is it true that the paths there are the old horse paths from the Stranahans?
Yeah, that's what we began with. I can't say all of them were, but some of them certainly were. Yeah, there were horse paths, and of course the Mets stables is still there, which is beautiful building that was their stables.
Yeah, lots of beautiful buildings, the manor house and all of that. Sure. Is there anything else that you would like to touch on about the Metro Parks before we kind of wrap this up?
Well, at Metro Parks, we only develop 20% of our land. 80% of it is for nature preservation. So we try to do as much in that 20% to interest and draw in as many people as we can. But think of a Metro Park as a park surrounded by a nature preserve. We're both things. And even if you never go to a Metro Park, they're still there helping keep our air and water clean and enhancing our property values and making Toledo a more beautiful place.
Excellent. Scott Carpenter, Metro Parks Toledo. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all our guests for coming on the show. I'm Stephen Zenner with the Toledo Free Press, and thank you, listener, for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Toledo Works.
Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in the Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.